Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on a Thursday afternoon. Thanks very much for tuning in. We'll talk to Ian Scher from CNET about some of the stories in technology that they've been covering lately. A little bit later in the program, which is the biggest pile, the bigger pile for you, your emergency fund or your credit card debt? More and more of us are seeing our credit card debt eclipse the amount of money we have saved for an emergency situation. We'll talk to Greg McBride about that from Bankrate. Greg comes by from time to time. Also, have you eaten yet at La Bona Vita in LaGrange? They've been around for a few years, but closed for a time to sort of do a redesign and a rebuild, and they just reopened last month. We'll talk to the people behind that restaurant to talk about what it takes to sort of rebuild something that's already existing, and how do you get that going. I'm also always interested in restaurants and the communities around them, so we'll kick that around. But we start with Ian Scher from CNET on a phone line now. Ian, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm well, thanks. A lot to talk about with you today. I want to start with this Verizon and 5G. You know, I'm not sure I have 4G yet. I'm probably walking around with 3G. I don't know what the G's actually mean, but Verizon is starting, they say, in 11 cities to experiment with 5G. Is that going to change my world?
Well, it's going to add an extra G, right?
That's what it's going to do.
So the problem is 10 to 100 times faster than what our speediest cell connections we have now. Most everyone's using 4G. And they actually just retired 2G. All these Gs, by the way, are generation. That's all it means. So this is the fifth generation of wireless technology. And it's supposed to actually replace the cable, the modems that we all have in our homes, and allow them to finally send us cellular signals to our homes that are just as good as what we've got, or better than what we have going through a wire, which would be really cool if it worked.
Well, tell me what that means, because in the story, it talks about, Roger Cheng, I think, wrote it, that it will work on everything from our car to our cell phone to our refrigerator. So once this is up and running, because it's so much faster, we're going to see many more appliances equipped with it. Is it because of the extra G, or are we just moving that way anyway?
Well, we're moving that way anyway, and that definitely is a part of it. But also, it has technology in it that can segment how the information is sent across. And so what will happen is that it's easier for appliances, for example, and smaller devices to be able to send lower amounts of data at a kind of rate that works it's more battery efficient and all that type of stuff. And they'll be able to do that and then also allow our phones to use it as well. Right now, for example, if you are in a big setting, let's say you were at the inauguration, a lot of the phones didn't work there.
Right.
Because there were too many people on the network, and it actually stopped, you know, they were trying to send their Instagrams and all of that stuff. And so what will happen is that by allowing to segment the network up and say, well, the refrigerator doesn't need to be able to stream video, then they're able to actually control it and make it so that many more devices can use cellular networks. And thus, it's a lot easier to do all this stuff versus now, where it's just kind of, something connects to it, it gets full connection. It's really fast. And that means you can only have so many devices connected to it.
All right, so Verizon trying that in 11 cities. Chicago is not one of them.
Neither is San Francisco.
Interesting. And it seems as if even the experiments within those cities is pretty limited. So it's not like you lived in Ann Arbor that you'd be taken care of. Okay, there's that. I want to talk UPS as well. And they're working with drones. And they had this sort of experiment. I love this story. So they had a drone that would take off through a hatch in the top of the truck, and it could go one way to deliver a house to a house, while the truck goes to another house. The drone drops off its package, finds the truck on its route, and then reparks itself, right? Is that where we're going?
It's super cool. So we actually have a video on CNET if you look at it, and you can see we show you what it looks like. But yeah, it seems like it exactly that, right? The driver could, in theory, start delivering twice as many packages if these drones work. Now, they're not going to be delivering like plutonium or heavy things, right? Your car cat litter isn't going to get that way. But there's a lot of packages I get all the time that are super light. And so this could solve that problem. And it's a really neat idea. Right now, it's still very testing phases. They're just looking into it. But you imagine a couple of years down the road, this could solve a lot of problems for them.
So the idea is the UPS truck could be driving down the street. And, you know, because we all get so much delivered now, every street's got a few deliveries. The driver could be jumping out to go to one porch while the drone hopscotches ahead of him, goes to the next house, right? Drops things out. So they could almost work in tandem down the street.
Yeah, and it would be, and the thing is, the truck has a battery built into it. One of the concerns that Amazon has brought up with their small testing programs they have outside the United States, because the FAA is very controlling about a lot of these things, is that they have found that, you know, it can only go a certain distance, right? So you have to be living near the drone area,
right,
or wherever they're storing all the stuff, right? So by putting it as the home base as the truck itself, you could go anywhere, right? You could go to the sticks and have a drone take off from the truck, and it would be fine, and they would just find the truck again. So it's
like
a really neat idea.
It's like a mobile launching pad.
Yes, exactly.
Since we're talking about charging batteries, another story in CNET, which I loved right up until the end of it, is this is Disney working on a room that where you could have a room in your house where all of your electronics are just automatically charged. You walk in there with your phone or your iPad or whatever. If you're in that room, it automatically recharges. No need to plug, no need to set it on a charging pad. It's just automatic. That sounds great, Ian.
It's a great idea. And of all people, Disney, right? Now, of course, it makes sense because they have a lot more electric stuff that they're doing. They've got those magic bands and stuff. So there's a reason they're researching this stuff. But there's one big hiccup.
It's a really big hiccup. Yeah, really big hiccup.
Yeah, the room has to be mostly constructed of aluminum, which means the walls, the ceiling, the floor. So if you're okay living on a very cold surface, then it works for you. But, you know, look, they also haven't told us whether it's actually safe for a human being to be inside of it. MIT, when they were researching it, said that there were a few concerns about sending energy through the air when a human's nearby. But it's a cool idea. And it shows that, you know, wireless charging technology does have some sort of a future. And they say it's 95% efficient this way. If they dropped it in half, maybe it's a lot safer. We don't know. But it's really cool that they're doing it.
I think I found I can charge my iPhone by hanging out under an electric wire as well. But that's not quite the same thing.
No, I don't think so.
So people aren't going to go for this. But the idea is that, well, this is the first step we need towards something a little more sustainable.
Well, the thing is actually that our batteries are just not getting better. And we've written about this on CNET before. The technology for batteries is just not, it hasn't gotten better in 15 years. Most of the stuff that has made them better has actually been all the other parts but the battery. Like our computer chips are more efficient, our phone chips are more efficient. And so what's happening is everyone's trying to invent new ways to get charging working better and to basically make the battery work a little better instead of relying on coming up with better batteries. And so this is just that latest example. But really, the reality is that we're just not going to be having better batteries in the near future. So what can we do to make everything else work better instead?
That's Ian Schur. You can read more at CNET.com. Ian, great to talk to you today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
It's 12:23. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, it's the Business Lunch. Why not have a little bit of lunch? Terry Rempert and Jim Barron are in the studio, the owners of La Bona Vida in LaGrange. Gentlemen, welcome to both of you. Thanks for coming
in. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, so you guys just went through a big rebuild, right?
Correct.
And what's involved with that? I mean, is there what prompts it? Do you look around and say we need to restart things, or what is it that brings you there?
Well, you know, we really wanted to go from the best kept secret in LaGrange to the best restaurant in LaGrange, and we believe in what we're doing, and I think this reopening has really shown that to the community.
Yeah, secrets aren't all that good when it comes to the restaurant business.
That's right.
It doesn't matter how good you are.
No.
As I read this, my view of it is that, Terry, you were the guy behind getting this restaurant going. Am I right in that?
That'd be correct. I mean, I was the one kind of pushed it, and Jim and I talked, and became a partnership. And
how many years ago?
That was about we started this process probably 3.5 years ago. We started the restaurant 2.5 years ago.
And you were in another industry?
Yes, I was in the printing industry for 17 years. Jim was in the steel industry, still is.
So you jumped, and Jim kind of hung out.
That's right.
I made the safe move.
But I like the idea because, you know, printing, it's one of those industries that's, you know, we've changed. So much has changed in this world. printing is probably one of them, right?
Oh yeah, very much so. Printing is traditionally is kind of really, you know, died down, and it's continuing to, because everything is going more digital. You can do things on the computer.
Right.
You can send files.
So you find something you love and move on and restart.
Correct.
Just like the restaurant in a way.
Yeah, and that's what we did. And with the restaurant, we started it, and then as we went along, and like Jim was saying, we kind of were the best kept secret in LaGrange, because we never really did an opening. We just opened.
Just opened, right.
And then as we went along, we decided let's really define ourselves, and we defined ourselves as a scratch kitchen, northern Italian restaurant, where we make everything in-house. And part of that, then we decided let's totally redecorate and redo things to kind of give it a new, fresh
look. Sounds
like
you sort of opened, got your feet under you, and then did the redesign. Right, Jim?
Exactly. I think we found the formula that works really well, and we've honed it to a point now that we're ready to tell everybody how good we are.
All right, so tell me the similarities between the steel industry and the restaurant business.
None. and quite frankly, coming out of the steel industry, I thought, okay, running the business that I have now, I thought that it'd be an easy changeover into the restaurant industry. But like anything in life, the more you know, the more you don't know.
Exactly. Well, two things I want to ask you about. One is this imported pasta maker that you guys have, right? You
make correct,
your own pasta
correct.
There.
Yes.
Is that unique? Is that different than usual?
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's an expensive piece of equipment. And, you know, a lot of restaurants would either, you know, buy their pasta from another purveyor or buy dry. We make ours fresh, and we make it, you know, daily depending on what we need. And so we have a pretty good recipe, and we do an extrude all sorts of. We have like 15 different dyes and make all sorts of different pastas.
The other thing that struck me is I went to a chain Italian restaurant. I apologize for that last weekend. And I was kind of looking forward to a beer, and they had Peroni, which of course everyone has Peroni, and then that was it. You guys have 10 craft. It sounds like I'm doing a commercial for you. I've never been there, but I just like the idea of 10 Italian craft beers there.
Yeah, we do have 10 Italian craft beers, and actually I even just brought in 4 more, so we're now up to 14, which we don't have on the menu yet because I just got them in. But as I brought in the studio, we have the Birra La Russia. I've got the Atto, which is an 8, and Say. Those are two ones, and you don't find those at every place. So that's what I think makes us unique for other restaurants, and especially Italian restaurants.
We're out of time, but I brought you guys in here, one, because I wanted to hear your story about changing careers, and now that you've done it for a few years, Terry, what is it that brings you the most joy of running an Italian restaurant in LaGrange?
Well, I think, you know, just customer service, bringing, you know, being able to please people and see smiles on faces when it's a job well done. So we have good customer service from our staff and from our kitchen, and it's nice. It's nice to see people walking away satisfied and coming back.
Coming back happy.
Right.
Terry Rampart and Jim Barron, the name of the restaurant, La Bona Vita in LaGrange. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Thank you very much.
Have a great lunch. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN 1236 on a Thursday afternoon. Elise Glink is in the studio. Elise is the publisher of thinklink.com and the CEO of Best Money Moves, and joins us from time to time, mostly on Thursdays. Elise, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
It's nice to be here.
All right, so if I want to get my message out, right, it's all about video.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got to be a short video because people aren't going to just watch for a very long time, right?
Right. So 1-minute videos or the minute message, I think, are a pretty interesting way to go. It seems that our attention spans are shorter and shorter, particularly these days, right?
It sounds like it's the video elevator pitch in a way.
It is.
But it's got to be more than just a...
It is. So I was thinking about this morning. I got a marketing email from a company that we do business with, actually in Lincoln, Illinois. Their name is Integrity Data. And what they do is compliance software for ACA, right? For the ACA, Obamacare, as many people like to know it. So if you've got all these employees.
Some people love ACA and they hate Obamacare.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Right.
It's all about naming things. But anyway, they sent a video. There's about 8 days left before your ACA compliance stuff is due. And so they were sending out, and I'm on their list for a variety of reasons. Like you, I'm sure you get a million emails every day. But I watched the video.
That's why I miss a lot of yours.
Right. I have to make them even shorter.
Right, right.
But this, what I thought was so interesting about this particular video was first the Ray line in the email messages was, can a dose of helium help your ACA compliance? And I just thought, well, helium could probably help almost anything, right? We've seen this with Grant Akatz, I think is how he pronounces it, over at his restaurant. He's got the helium balloons.
Alinea.
Alinea, right. Thank you. So have you been there?
I haven't. I want to call it Alinea. I think it's much prettier.
Alinea?
Alinea, but it's Alinea.
Yeah. Anyway.
We should go.
We should go. We'll do that after we get off the air.
Okay.
So anyway, I was watching this video, and what the owner of the company did is he pretended to, or maybe he really did, I think he pretended to, suck the air out of a balloon,
right?
And then he talked through all the different talking points of what they needed to know. Obviously, this would be more interesting if you have to do ACA compliance testing.
And with the helium voice?
With the helium voice, which was what they really did, was they just sped up the video. But I thought it was a really clever, eye-catching way. And they had little bubbles that had the points where you could read them, right? Because he's talking so fast, in different colors. That kind of thing is very eye-catching, and it's quick, but it allows you to go back over and over again. And so in the span of a minute, he probably compacted about 3 minutes worth of information. But I thought it was interesting.
And so what are these videos used for? Are they used to introduce your company, your product to people, or are they used like that sort of as an intercommunication thing within the office, right?
No, actually, they used that. They pushed it out on whatever their email marketing service was. So this was for new clients, anybody who has this need of ACA compliance testing. But you could use them. I use them up on our Facebook page. You have people who put them up on YouTube. You've got different kinds of digital email marketing. We'll show them up like in the form of an ad, a video ad, on almost anywhere in the internet. So it's an interesting mix of uses for something that's kind of a high-end elevator pitch.
And who is doing, I mean, I'm thinking that, well, first of all, the tools are accessible to probably all of us to make films.
Do you have a phone?
This. Right, exactly.
it's absolutely. If you have a phone, a smartphone these days, what ends up happening is that you're able to use that and use some downloadable video editing software. YouTube has some, by the way. You're able to download that and use it so that you're able to edit on the fly almost.
But is there a profession here? I'm thinking of my daughter who's studying in communications, and she's making these films. She happens to be studying right now in Hawaii. God bless her.
And when are we visiting her?
In a few weeks.
Okay.
But so she is, and she's really sending back these wonderful films that she's making, movies that she's making with her and her friends doing different things. And I'm thinking, well, that's exactly what we're talking about here.
We are.
But she's studying to do it. Maybe she should be studying something else, because right now that's something anyone can do.
Well, it is something that everybody feels like they can do. But I would say, and we do this for our clients, right? We have a number of clients and we've made dozens and even hundreds of videos for over the years. Plus, my own YouTube channel, Expert Real Estate Tips, has almost 600 videos on it. And some of them are a minute. Some are a little longer than a minute.
Right.
But understanding how to put together the story of a video is really a talent. And that is something that you can study, how you do that, the physical stuff. I honestly think almost anybody can do it with their phones.
Right. And so, but the craft of it, the storytelling of it, the
it's gotta be
expository beginning and all of that, right?
It's important. So for Best Money Moves, we're going in the video studio tomorrow, and we're doing a series of one-minute videos and some longer ones as well that we're going to be using for like webinars that you can just look at inside the product. But the one-minute videos are all about telling different pieces of the story. Remember, you don't have to tell the whole story every time. Sometimes you can tell pieces of a story.
You're probably better off doing 5 1-minute versions of different parts of the story than 1 5-minute version if you want people to watch it.
I do. I think so, especially if you're trying to bring them in. I think once people are interested in what you're doing and they're looking at it and they're interested, then they're willing to give you a little bit more of their time.
Okay, so that's what I'm interested in then too, because we are a nation that sits in front of a TV. We binge watch, right? Mm-hmm. So we're willing to invest time in videos like this, and yet we're talking about doing it in a minute or losing people. When do you know that you can expand things? And I mean, can you ever hold them for a 30-minute video or a 30, you know, whether it's a symposium or a speech or things like that? I mean, how do you get people to stay with something for a longer period of time?
So I would say that it's always about when I would tape my radio shows, when I would do a two-hour radio show on the weekends, it was always about promoting to the next segment. And I think that as you become better and better at being on camera, some people are naturally better at it than others, just like some people are born to be radio hosts, right?
Was that an insult?
I think that was a compliment.
Oh, thank you. I'll take it
for
that
both
way.
Of us.
Okay, good.
No, but when you're, you know, when you're becoming more and more comfortable, like the typical person who's not doing this professionally, then you start to become more adept in promoting to the next thing you're doing and stick around. You're going to do that. Things that people who are born to do this sort of naturally anyway.
You know, we're talking about savings and credit card debt with Greg McBride from Bankrate coming up.
Oh,
after
he's a great
the
guy.
Break. See how I did that?
Yeah.
But it interests me because, you know, on Thursdays, I run down from the studio and we record the Mincing Rascals podcast with John Williams and Eric Zorn and Scott Standis this week. And it's sometimes 25, 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, who's going to listen to, who's going to invest that much time? So,
but podcasts are different. People seem to really listen way through podcasts. That, I think, is above my pay grade. I don't really know. I think sometimes it's people are the really interesting and sometimes they're not. But YouTube for years has had a tool that shows you where the viewership drops off.
Ah.
And so you can start to go back over your videos. I can look at them over mine. And you can start to see patterns on where people make comments, where they drop off, where they come back, and what that looks like. And so it shows you, like, for some of my real estate videos, the ones that we did on kind of home improvement, people watched all the way through, and some of those were 3 minutes, some were 5 minutes.
When you looked at when they dropped off, was there sort of a unifying event with all of them?
Yeah, I think when people talked too long and they weren't seeing enough visual change,
when someone's making too long of a point.
Mm-hmm, right. Exactly. But actually, one of my very longest videos, which is how to paint a room, has 2.5 million video views. And that one's my longest. So I don't know why that one's worked better.
Elise Glink, thanks very much for coming by today.
It's a pleasure,
Steve. Go enjoy your lunch.
Will do.
Thank you, Steve Alexander. Steve Bertrand here on the Business Lunch on 720 WGN as we wind down. All right, Bankrate is out with a study or looked at some numbers, and they said the percentage of Americans with more credit card debt than emergency savings has grown from 22 to 24% in the past year. So the idea is that we have more in credit card debt than we do in the bank to cover an emergency. Greg McBride is with us. He joins us from time to time from Bankrate and to go through some of these numbers. Greg, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thank you, Steve. Good afternoon.
Nice to talk with you again. There's a quote from you. It says, too many Americans haven't right-sized their savings relative to debt. Explain that for me. What do you mean?
Yeah, I mean, in a perfect world, everybody would have an adequate emergency savings cushion, enough to cover 6 months worth of expenses, and they wouldn't be carrying any high interest rate credit card debt. But, you know, we're far from that mark. Only a little bit more than half of Americans actually have more savings than credit card debt. And as you noted at the top of the segment, about 1 in 4 have more credit card debt than they do savings. Now, here's the kicker, Steve, is that this is something we've been looking at over the course of the last half dozen years. And despite the fact that the economy has improved over that time, that unemployment's come down, and that even that income has shown some growth, these numbers have not improved. We're still looking at about the, you know, essentially the same numbers as we saw back in 2011 with regard to percentage of Americans that have more in savings than credit card debt, and the inverse of that, those having more credit card debt than emergency savings.
Well, in a weird way, does it speak to confidence in the economy that they're spending more than they're saving because they're feeling good about things? Does that make any sense?
Well, no, because nobody was feeling good about things in 2011.
Right.
And, you know, the numbers we see now are, you know, virtually the same as what we had seen back then. There's been a little fluctuation over the years. But, you know, the point is, yeah, nobody has, you know, we're just not seeing enough moving of the needle to the point where you're seeing big changes in either of these, either, you know, a surge in the percentage of people that have more emergency savings, or, you know, a sharp drop in the percentage of people that have more credit card debt. No, you're not seeing significant movement in either of those, which shows that even as people do things like pay down their debt and boost their savings, that relative to each other, they still haven't right-sized that equation. If they have more credit card debt than savings, they've been that way for a long time. Even if they've paid down the debt, it's still more than what they have in savings, and vice versa. If they have more money in emergency savings, you're not seeing more people join that crowd.
They're sort of just staying on even keel, or not maybe an even keel, but staying on the same pace that they've always been on.
Yeah, exactly. And, people, we know from other surveys that we do just how woefully undersaved people are for emergencies in particular, retirement as well, but emergencies in particular. People recognize that. We have seen a very very significant change in attitudes over the last decade or so in terms of how people feel about savings, how important they prioritize that to be, and the fact that they know they're short of the mark and they're not comfortable with that. But yet it's just been very difficult for a lot of people to move that needle, whether it's because of high expenses or meager growth in income or just overall sloppiness in their financial habits. A lot of people, despite the priority they put on savings, not making much effort.
Well, it seems to me that once you're there, if you're there with credit card debt, and you're facing the credit card debt and you've got a chunk of money in your emergency savings, I mean, I would be sorely tempted to take that savings money and to pay down the debt. I mean, that seems to be almost a valid use of that money, is it not? Or should you keep the pool of money for an emergency that may or may not come?
Well, here's the key part of that. You have to be saving some of each and every paycheck. If you have that habit in place, then yes, feel free to use a portion of your emergency savings, maybe not all of it, but a portion of your emergency savings to pay down that credit card debt. Because the math there is pretty simple. If you're lucky, you're earning 1% on the savings, but you may well be paying 16% on the credit card. But if you don't have that habit of saving in place, then no, you don't want to wipe out what savings you have to pay down the credit card debt, because what happens next week when the car breaks down? There's no savings to absorb it. It goes right back on that credit card. So you have to have that habit in place.
And the credit cards are going to stop giving you money if you get in too bad of shape.
Yeah, exactly. So all the more reason that, you build that habit of saving so that when unplanned expenses come along and, put a big dent in what you have, you're only one paycheck away from starting to replenish that. And at the same time, you're paying down that credit card debt. You're freeing up a little bit of available credit so that, worst case, if you need it, there's more credit available to you.
Greg McBride from Bankrate.com. Greg, thanks very much for joining us today. You can read more, and I know the study is available at Bankrate.com as well.
Always a pleasure, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Look forward to the next time.